The following podcast is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Good afternoon, everyone. We're going to go ahead and get started. When the pizza comes, we'll just sort of pass them out. We don't want it to be too disruptive that they couldn't get here before 12:15. So as soon as they come, we'll make sure that they get distributed. But I did want to just welcome all of you. My name is Tracy Mundy Jenkins. I'm the Director of the Office of Career Services, and we're really fortunate today to have Donna Gerson with us. She's the author of Choosing Small, Choosing Smart, and she has a lot of good information to share with you about job search strategies for targeting small and mid-sized law firms. So I'd like to go ahead and get her presentation started. Welcome, Donna.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you.
Oh, I didn't even talk yet. Can everyone hear me okay? Okay. My name is Donna Gerson, and I am going to talk for about an hour about looking for a job at a small firm, how to target those firms, how to be an effective interviewer, how to write a resume and a cover letter at work. And I am also using PowerPoint for like the third time here, so I'm going to start off with this. Does everyone have handout materials? That's this. I have not only the slides that you're about to see, but also notes that I typically give to law students as well. So you get a double whammy here. I'm passing out, starting over at this end of the courtroom, candy and raffle tickets that I want you to put your name, if you would like, in the blue bag and pass it around. Why? Because this is the funnest class you're going to have in law school. I always come with little gifts to give away. I have a copy of my book, Choosing Small, Choosing Smart. Also, because I'm a writer for the American Bar Association, I write the jobs column for Student Lawyer Magazine. The ABA sent me a $50 gift certificate to Amazon. So you must be prepping to win. So at the end, I promise to talk up until about 5 to 1, and then we're going to do a drawing. The candy is because I started doing this years ago when I started these talks. The candy is because I just want people to have fun. Law school is not a fun place, typically. Career services is definitely, and I'll tell you a little bit about myself. Career services is not the funnest place in the world, but it's a very important place to be. And so I call it my Mary Poppins moment. A spoonful of sugar helps the ugly medicine of career services go down. But what I'm going to tell you today are things that you might already know. Some of it's very much common sense. Some of it you're going to groan and say, I really didn't want to have to hear that, but I'm giving you the news anyway. So that's the candy. The lecture outline is in your handout materials. I'm going to talk about why you want to work at a small firm, how to narrow your search, networking, creating a database that's going to work for you, how to contact small firms, and follow-up issues. My background is this. I'm a 1990 graduate of Temple University Law School. I clerked for a judge. I worked in private practice. For 7 years, I was the director of career services at the University of Pittsburgh. So I feel your pain on the law school side because I was a law student. I'm a member of the Pennsylvania Bar. I went through OCI. I went through judicial clerkship search. I've done it all on the student side. I've also, for 7 years, done it on the law school career services side, counseling students, cultivating employers, and working to make a really good career services office, so I know that the pros and cons of what you're going through. I didn't write this book out of my imagination. Because I'm a writer for the ABA, because this is what I do now in my career, I talk to hundreds of small firm employers across the country. I found them, you know, through the internet. I found them on chat, on websites. I found them all over. And this book represents what they're telling me to tell you, which is why there are whole sections on in their own words. So I'm not just making this stuff up. Why? I gave you this information, too, not to scare you, but this is really interesting statistically, that Washington, D.C. is numero uno in national ranks for lawyers. It's the most crowded legal market in the country. It's also one of the most equal I've seen in terms of male-female ratio. So I just thought that was just interesting to show you. What is a small law firm? A small law firm is typically a firm of 50 or fewer lawyers, just so you can get your head around what we're talking about when I say small firm. But keep in mind that there are geographic idiosyncrasies about small. So
the small is 50 or fewer comes from a lot of surveys that you see that have been done by the ABA or that have been done by the National Association for Law Placement. But keep in mind that small will depend on your geography. So if you're going to Omaha, Nebraska, or somewhere that is not a large metro area, clue yourself into what you think small is by asking around, because small in Omaha, Nebraska is 9 lawyers. And small in New York City is probably going to be about 100 lawyers. When you say to a practitioner in Manhattan, what kind of firms do you work at, they'll say, I'm at a small firm, it's about 100 lawyers. So that gives you an idea. And just keep in mind that branch offices of large law firms are not small firms. So when you start to do your research and you come across a 33-lawyer office of Morgan, Lewis & Bockius in Pittsburgh, for example, not a small firm. That's a large firm. They look, sound, and hire just like a large firm does with OCI. Here's what propelled me to write this book in the first place. When you look at the American Bar Foundation, the latest study of the profession, which was done in the year 2000, it said that if you look at the entire profession, about 74% of all lawyers work in private practice. So when you break things down by government, judicial, non-traditional, et cetera, about 3/4 of all lawyers, when you see them, are in private practice. Of that 74%, 66% work in firms of 50 or fewer lawyers. And that's a really huge number when you think about it. It really changed the way I looked at things, because I know that when I was a law student and also when I worked in career services doing the on-campus process, it seems like the entire world works at very, very big law firms. That's the only choice that's out there. And we know that that's not true. In fact, only about 10% of all lawyers in private practice work at firms of 100 or more lawyers. So it's more likely that you're going to end up working in a small firm practice. But why is this important? Why should you want to work at a small law firm? Here's one reason. You get more responsibility early in your career. Fewer layers of management at small law firms. You don't have tons of associates between you and a client. So you might be doing depositions or going to court and presenting motions and really handling live client matters early in your career. And if you're somebody who enjoys doing that, you should be very excited to go to a small firm. You also get to use your entrepreneurial skills, meaning small firms are businesses, as are all firms. And if you can bring in clients, if you can make a successful business venture at this, you're going to have a lot more promotion and compensation. While small firm hires start usually at a lower level than, say, a larger law firm, there's no lockstep promotion. Anecdotally, I can tell you, when you talk to small firms, people who run small firms, and say, well, what's your promotion process for an associate? They'll say, you know what, if the person is good, if they bring in clients, if we find that they have a good block of business, and if they're really maturing into practice, we might make them an equity partner in 5 years, maybe in fewer years, depending on where you are in the country. The median starting salary nationally for firms of 50 or fewer lawyers has been currently pegged at about $65,000. Now, that's the median. It might be higher in larger metro areas. It's probably quite a bit lower in smaller metro areas, but I just want to give you an idea that these are exciting places to work. They're places where you can take the skills you learn in law school, use them almost right away, and if you're a business person and if you're thinking about this, that can be very important. Now, what are small firms seeking? Now, this is also something I want law students to get their heads around as well. When you contact small law firms, it's very, very different than when you contact large law firms through on-campus interviewing. The on-campus process is, first of all, one of the most artificial processes you'll ever see. It basically takes law students from a class and sifts them out by your grades and by the ranking of American University's law school relative to the other schools that are being hired at. And that's it. If you're a nice person, if you're a nasty person, it doesn't matter necessarily. Your interpersonal skills come into play, not as much. It's grades and the placement of the school, and that's it. But small firms are looking for some subtly different things, and I want you to integrate this and think about this, because it's important when you're approaching these small law firms that you present yourself in the right way to them, because they're looking for different things. First of all, they're looking obviously for a good fit. Every employer wants that. They want to retain the people they hire. So they're looking for people who are personable, who want to be in that environment. They're looking for experience. So whether you're a first, second, or third year law student, I can't stress enough that especially with small law firms, you want to gain experience, and it doesn't matter whether it's paid or unpaid or volunteer. If you're a first year struggling to look for a summer job, I always say really balance how much time you're going to spend during this important semester scavenging for a paid job or the job of your dreams, which doesn't exist at this point, trust me, and really work hard on doing something that is for academic credit, a clinic, volunteer, working for a judge, anything, but really build up your resume. The more experiences you have, the better informed you are, the better you're able to talk through an interview at a small firm. A desire to work in a particular town or city, we're going to talk about that in a few minutes, but I think it's important that you create connections for yourself at small firms. This is not necessarily the case in large metropolitan areas like Washington and New York, Chicago, San Francisco, but if you're looking in places that are a little off the beaten track, like Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, or Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, or wherever, you really want to think hard about how to make those connections, because it's very important to small firms in particular. They want to know that you're intelligent, and we're going to talk a little bit later about grades and how much they matter, but I want to convey that, you know, you have to be smart, but you don't have to be a rocket scientist to do this at any level. And bar passage for third-year law students, this is a particularly important fact when you're marketing yourself to firms. You've got to make every effort to pass the bar the first time, because that's one of the key factors in terms of hiring at a small firm. They need you to hit the ground running. They need you to be licensed to sign pleadings, to go to court to represent clients, etc. So it's very important that you work on the bar passage issue. And I was talking to Matthew before I came in here, and he said that it's still collecting information for the class of 2005, and they're already at 95% for the class of 2005 for employment after law school. So that's really, really good. So I don't want people to worry unduly about this, but you've really got to work on it. When do small firms hire? This is like the big question, because everyone wants to know if there's a season. OCI, there's a season for it. When there are job fairs for government agencies, there's a season for it. You know when the honors programs hire? Small firms hire in two different ways, okay? The first is the obvious one. When the need arises, they do a job posting through the office, e-attorney or any other means of communication. And what I always advise students very briefly is, the person who gets the information in first, promptly and professionally, is always at an advantage with a small firm, because even if they say, if they post today at American and the deadline is March 1st, it's not in your best interest to wait until March 1st and say, oh, I'll get to it later. Get to it right away. Send in your cover letter, resume, and do your follow-up, because they want to hire somebody quickly usually, and the person who sends it in quickly and is available to interview and makes it easy for them is always at an advantage over somebody who's going to wait a long time to do it. So small firms will always say, get it in quickly, because this is not what they spend most of their time doing. Don't forget, large law firms have these wonderful hiring programs where they know they're coming in to get 30 business and finance associates. A small law firm is probably going to hire maybe once a year, maybe once every 3 years. There's no predictability to this. So keep that in mind, that when they need to hire pretty much right away. Now the second way to find a job is through a self-initiated job search. And this is what I'm going to spend some amount of time talking about, because this is the process of sending basically unsolicited letters to small firms to express your interest. Instead of you waiting for the, you know, I call the job fairy to show up and say, you know, here's your job, or I'm waiting to post, this is you, the law student, taking a very proactive approach and saying, I'd like to work at a small law firm, I'd like to target firms that interest me, and I am going to write to them and produce the demand for what I'd like to see happen. And this works, because lawyers lawyers will say to me, you know, I typically don't have time to post. I don't mind getting unsolicited resumes. I don't look at that and say, what the nerve of that person writing to me. Frequently they say, thank goodness, someone was interested in me, and now that I've seen their resume, I might be interested in them because I wasn't thinking about it until now. So don't be afraid of sending unsolicited letters. This is the way it works. Now, how do you narrow things down? Because the world, you know, it's huge, right? A lot of students will say, I want to get a job anywhere, doing anything. And that usually sets you up for a great deal of frustration because when you have sort of unlimited resources, you do nothing typically. You can't do a 50-job search. If you've heard Kim Walton speak, she'll tell you, and I'll say it again, you don't want to do mass mailings. It is a waste of your time. You won't do a really thorough job. You'll kill a lot of trees, and it's expensive. It's very expensive to do. So how do you narrow things down for small law firms? Here are my suggestions. Try to limit yourself to no more than 3 locations at the most, okay? And if you're limited to one location, say you have family in Washington, D.C., you can't move, you don't want to move, that's it, consider it a blessing because it will force you to focus yourself with a lot of precision on this one area. But in any event, try to limit it to no more than 3. Why does location matter? Here are the reasons why, and this ties into when you interview and write your cover letters, because this is important to intertwine with small firms. It goes to client getting and it goes to retention, meaning if you have a connection to an area, and I'm not asking you to create fairy tales for employers about, like, you know, your great-grandmother lived here and whatever. If you have a connection because you have family there, you're relocating there because of spouse or partner or whatnot, if you just like the area because it's wonderful and beautiful, if you have a tie to the area, express it to the small law firm because if you can say, I grew up here and my entire family lives here and I know so many people who would be interested in that I would like to develop business with for your firm, you will win huge points with small law firms who will think, here's somebody who finally gets it. Not only am I practicing law, but I'm building a business, and that will really help you. So think about the whole client getting angle when you write. It also goes to retention, meaning how long you're going to stay at the firm. And this can be a big issue. Now, at large law firms, they kind of expect a turnover, and if you've read any of the retention studies, like Keeping the Keepers 2, you might be surprised to learn that 2 years after graduation, nearly 25% of the people hired at all firms nationwide leave those jobs. And after 5 years, over 50% leave those jobs. So a lot of times when large firms are hiring, they know that there's like an expiration date stamped on your head and you're going to be leaving. They work it into their budget. They know from a recruiting perspective that they actually want you to leave because it's an inverse pyramid, especially at these large firms, that they want a lot of associates coming in. And at the end, they want, you know, one person to be a partner at the end of this. Small firms view it differently. They say, I'm not typically hiring all the time, and I can't have a revolving door here. I want to know that this person is moving to St. Louis, Missouri, because they really want to be in St. Louis, Missouri, because that person's probably sitting there saying, I don't know why I'm in St. Louis, Missouri. So you want to make sure that you tell them, I want to stay in this place. This is a place that interests me. I have a connection here. So location is the first way you can narrow things down a little bit, and I urge law students to just kind of think about that a little bit as you go through the process. Also think about narrowing things down by practice area. Now I know that law is a general degree. You don't get a specialty, you don't major in anything, although people do get certificates now at a lot of schools. But generally speaking, small law firms fall into two categories, sort of the general practice litigation-driven firms that do a little bit of everything. They do a little trust and estates, they'll do a little plaintiff's personal injury, they'll do this and that and the other thing, and that's fine. And for that, that's what I call just general litigation-driven. But then the other side of the coin is there are many small law firms that are what we call boutique law firms, and as the name implies, a boutique law firm specializes in a particular area. So you'll find boutique firms in immigration law, trust and estates law, tax. You'll see a lot of firms now developing in elder law, which is a combination of health law, Medicare, and long-term planning. Very interesting work. So if you're sitting here saying, I know that there are some things that really interest me, it might behoove you as you go through narrowing your search to start to articulate in your head, based on the experience you've gained, based on the classes you've taken, what things you would really like to do to narrow down your search. And it's also helpful to inform yourself about things you know you don't want to do. Because if you've taken criminal law and said, wow, I don't ever want to see this again until it's on the bar exam and then I'm done for life, then when you see postings or you're doing a search, you'll know to take the parameters and say, I am not going to subject myself to criminal law or tax law or whatever it is you don't want to do. So be discriminating in that respect. Now what do you do next? As you're pulling things together for small firms, now you have to be a bit of a sleuth, because here's the problem. Unlike large law firms, which have that NALP directory of legal employers, which is online and also in that huge telephone book in your career services office, and unlike government agencies, which have very well-developed application processes now, really great websites, really great job fairs, small firms are like the Wild West of how to find things because they're not organized. They don't confer together about how they're going to hire, and so the burden is on law students to figure this out. And so I'm going to take you through the resources that are going to help you identify small firms and how to do it. And the first way is find out if there's a directory of small firms. Now, unbelievably, there are a number of law schools across the country that do provide this to their law students, and I'm just going to go through a list of them really quickly, and it kind of goes to the issue of reciprocity. That is, if you're looking outside of Washington, D.C., you might want to get reciprocity at the University of Colorado has a database for the Denver area. The University of Wisconsin at Madison has three lists of small firms, Chicago, Madison, and Milwaukee. The University of Pittsburgh, home of the championship Steelers, I'm going to say that like 20 times today. They have, because I started this, a directory of small firms. University of Texas at Austin has one. North Carolina has a small firm directory through their e-attorney database. And the University of Oregon has one, has a password-protected directory of Eugene, Oregon firms. Now, obviously, this makes a lot of sense when you're in small markets. You know, Pittsburgh has 7,000 lawyers thereabouts in their bar association. When you're dealing with Washington, which is a huge, huge market, you can't expect career services to do this, although I always say when I speak at law schools, and someone at Fordham last week took me up on this, I said, there's a huge business out there for an enterprising law student to start a small firm directory for metro areas across the United States. I think it would be very, very cool to do. So take a look and see if there's a small firm directory, because all of your troubles might be over at that point. And outside of the D.C. metro area, look at reciprocity. The next place I look is Martindale Hubbell on either Lexis or Nexis, or you can find it on CD-ROM at many law schools as well. The only thing to keep in mind with Martindale Hubbell is it is not the cosmic like phone book of all law firms in the world. A lot of students look at these 30-plus volumes of Martindale Hubbell and say, aha, it's all the lawyers in the United States. Not true. It's a paid resource. It's a subscription service. So keep in mind that mostly very large firms are in Martindale Hubbell. And so if you're starting to do some of the searches that are up here and in your handout materials, don't think that just because you've done that, you're like, wow, I've found all the small tax firms in Bethesda, Maryland now, and I'm done. You're not. This is the next step in the research process for small law firms. And I've given you some examples about how you can search and how you can think about it. This is not attorney locator on the web. This is something quite different. So I just wanted to clarify that. And your law library should have the handout material for the Martindale Hubbell searches. So moving along, other research. So you're gathering information. You're looking at location. You're looking at practice area. Where else do you want to look? Take a look at Bar Association resources, and this is kind of a 1-2 punch. I'm going to talk about Bar Associations with regard to networking, but also to research. Bar Associations publish directories. Why are these important? You'll say, if A to Z lawyers, how am I supposed to figure this out? Well, usually Bar Associations are divided up by sections, committees, and divisions, okay? Usually it's kind of like the Army. They divide themselves up into different areas. And so most Bar Associations will organize themselves in a back index by practice areas. So another clue for a law student who's looking at family law or tax law or trust and estate law is to take a look at a bar association directory and working your way backwards, cross-reference everyone who's listed by a practice area that's in an interest area of yours and go that way. It's slow going. This is why I brought the candy in, because it's disappointing to find out that this is how much work that goes into it. But this, if I were a law student, and I try to recreate this every time, this is how I would approach it. And those are in your handout materials, so you can access them. I would also do internet searches, and I do simple Google searches. I go on and I'll say Bethesda, Maryland Family Law and see what comes up. A huge majority of law firms now, including small law firms, have even rudimentary websites. And so even if they don't belong to a bar association, they're likely to come up on an internet search. So that's a fourth way that you could start to develop who your likely candidates are. I also always mention that there's a super resource that's duly published by Harvard and Columbia Law Schools. It's also available online now, and I've given you the website for it, but I also have a copy. I always bring this copy with me. There is a directory of private public interest law firms. These are firms that have defined themselves, and this is really interesting. You think of public interest as government or very special interest. But there are firms that do constitutional law issues and really interesting appellate cases, and they're listed in this directory. And so if your practice area interests sort of surround this, take a look at this directory, because these are mostly small law firms and all the contact information is in here by state and by city. And I think it's a cool, interesting, a little bit obscure resource. And finally, I say take a look at the yellow pages to see what's out there. But moving ahead, so you're doing a paper search, okay? You're looking at all these resources, bar association directories, Martindale, Hubble. The 1-2 punch that I talk about with networking, with job searching, is the second part, which is networking. And I know everybody at law school hates networking. I speak all across the country. When I sit with law students and say, what have you done in terms of meeting people, they usually roll their eyes and say, I really wish, like, that, you know, my job would just come magically. And the truth of the matter is that small firm hiring is highly relationship oriented. It's much more relationship oriented than large firm hiring or agency hiring. So I want to give you about 5 minutes about why you ought to consider networking, and take a look at your handout materials, because I recommend two great books by Susan Rowan. And I just really encourage law students to do this, because one of the ways that you can narrow down or refine your search of small law firms is by doing the networking. You know, you might find that there are 100 small family law firms in the Northern Virginia area, and that's kind of an untenable amount of firms to look at and write to. But what you want to do next is refine things by talking to people, letting them know what you're looking for, and also trying to find out information that would be useful to you when you make your correspondence. So begin with your career services office. It is the number one place to start, whether you're a first, second, or third year law student. I was riding up in the elevator. I parked in the garage, and I forgot where the career services office was, and it was really interesting, because I not only asked the young woman who was downstairs with me in the parking garage where the career services office was, and she said, I don't know. It could be 5, it could be 3, I'm not sure. And then I got on an elevator car, maybe ironic, with, it seems like 7 or 8 law students, and I said, hey, where's the career services office? And nobody knew. And that, you should know, it's on the 5th floor. Now I know. but everyone should know where it is. And soon they're moving to the 1st floor, I'm told, right where the law library is. You got to go in and talk to the people there, because the more they know about you, the more you identify yourself, the better chances you are of making connections. The better chances you have of also saying, hey, I've narrowed down my job search. I want to do a small firm. I want to be in this location. I want to be doing this kind of work. And you'll see, bells and whistles will go off with the professionals in the office, because they'll say, okay, you've narrowed the search down. It's really hard to help law students who say, help me, I'll do anything when I get out of law school. You really want to narrow things down. So talk to your law professors. Take a look. Don't burn bridges if at all possible, because the theory is you never know who people know. You never know what's going to happen. So take a look at all of these. I want to mention the friends category. NASA was just telling me that a 2005 just got a job with a wonderful federal agency. How did she do it? Her friend applied for the job, got the offer, and declined. It wasn't what he was looking for, but then he told his classmate about this job opening. She pursued it. She got the job. So these are like true stories that, you know, I can tell you so many all the time about how this happens. So keep in mind that networking is a key way to go. Bar associations. Why are bar associations important? They're not only important for the directory information that you can get, but because of all of the socializing experiences that you can have. There are typically salon small firm divisions that you can tap into, and then there are specific practice area divisions that have continuing legal education classes that you can attend even as a law student. So if you have a strong interest doing a type of law, don't be afraid to go to continuing legal education classes where you can not only learn more and augment the body of knowledge that you have, but also you're rubbing shoulders with people who are doing the kind of work that you want to be doing. So keep that in mind as a way that you can get information. And I give you in your handout materials some bar associations in D.C., but also like a master list of bar associations all over. There are mandatory bar associations. These are the ones that you have to join to be licensed in a particular state. So I have to join and pay my dues in Pennsylvania, but I'm a voluntary member of the Allegheny County Bar Association. I'm a voluntary member of the Women in the Law section. I'm a voluntary member of the ABA is a voluntary bar association, but they all can provide very rich opportunities for you. And if you're a law student, there are usually highly discounted memberships, and to join the ABA is only $20 a year, so it's a nice deal. Take a look at alumni associations and take advantage of all the programs that are offered by your career services office. For example, I was asked to promote this. Today at 4 o'clock, if you're not small firmed out by then, or if you've learned everything that you need to know but you could still learn more, there's a great panel discussion that's going to be in this room at 4 o'clock that's going to talk to you, they're going to tell you all about the challenges of small firm practice and what they're looking for and how they hire in particular. So keep that in mind. I also always mention, in terms of community and social organizations, fraternities and sororities are very, very important. These are places where you can write and say, help me find lawyers who are practicing in Miami, Florida, who were tri-delts or something like that. And I have real success stories to share with you where students have made these contacts. And because there is an affinity, because there's a certain friendliness that comes with being in a common situation, people get help that they wouldn't otherwise get. And you find specialized bar associations for women, African American, by religion, by practice area, by ethnicity, by anything you want. There's a bar association out there. It's unbelievable. The other thing that I was going to mention, and I say this with a grain of salt, is there are online networking resources like LinkedIn, Craigslist. LinkedIn is kind of a new one out there, and I've been on it a few times. I've had some good successes personally, so I wouldn't recommend it if I didn't think it was good. But the only thing that I tell law students all the time is just be wary. You're not going to find a job sitting in front of your computer, okay? It's a great way to get information, but it shouldn't be the only way that you interface with the world. The people who are going to be the most successful practicing law are not necessarily the smartest. They're the people who have the best interpersonal skills. They're the people who actually enjoy going out and meeting people. And so don't get lured into thinking that there's a master website out there that's going to solve all your problems, or if you can only do like an e-chat with somebody, they're going to give you all the answers. So if you've been collecting the information that you need to do, okay, you've been doing your research, you're a discerning shopper. You're thinking, here's where I want to be, here's what I want to do. You're talking to people and saying, help me figure out who the best lawyers in this area are. May I use your name if I make contact? You're going to try to go out and do informational interviews. Whether you're first, second, or third year, it's never a bad time to go out and say, hey, I want to know how, you know, the type of work you do, why you enjoy it, if there's someone else I should meet, and so forth. But now the next step then is really putting together a list. and saying, and I'm not saying this is going to be a 500-person list, it's probably going to be maybe the 50 biggest immigration law firms in the D.C. metro area, and that's the 50 small firms in the D.C. metro area. If that, you might have a couple of lists. You might have it by different cities. You might have it by different practice areas. But if you've been doing your research, then you've created a mailing list that reflects your personal interests. So what do you do next? You're going to write letters, cover letters and resumes. And just some tips, you're never going to write to whom it may concern or dear sir or madam. You're going to pick up the phone and call and say, to whom would I send a resume for legal hiring? Unlike large law firms, there isn't a managing partner or a hiring partner at these firms. What I also tell students to do, too, is if you don't want to get on the phone and call and call and call, make a good educated guess looking at, if it's Martindale Hubbell or the website, who a decision maker might be. Maybe it's the American University law graduate who's in the mix there. Don't pick someone, I hate to say it, like, don't pick someone too young who can't make who isn't going to make a decision. A 1999 graduate might not be in a position to make a hiring decision, or maybe 2002 is better. And similarly, someone who graduated in 1930 from law school is probably not in a position to make a hiring decision. So just use your common sense if you're going to take that approach to it. And what do you want to emphasize? This goes back to what I mentioned earlier. Mention experience and be specific. Mention your desire to work at a small firm, because small firms might be suspicious. What are you doing here? Why would you want to work at this firm? Be specific about your desire to work hard, to undertake responsibility. It will definitely help with the small firms. And talk about your entrepreneurial interests. Talk about your interpersonal skills. But give specific examples. I shudder when I see cover letters, especially from law students, that have like these Miss America statements, like, I am hardworking. Well, who wouldn't be hardworking? Everyone's hardworking. Everyone is diligent. Give me examples. I'm hardworking. Throughout college, I worked in 3 part-time jobs to get through school with scholarships. So give them something that they can look at and say, oh, I understand what this person is about. Avoid reciting your resume. Your resume is your resume. It's there waiting for them to read. So give them the highlights. Don't feel like you have to go through every single job that you've had and give a line about it. Give them the highlights that are important. Dealing with grades, here's the good news, because 50% of every class is going to be in the bottom half of the class, and that includes everyone in practice, so keep that in mind. Everyone gets out of law school and they're all like, Wile E. Coyote's super genius when they get out, but the reality is, half the people out there practicing are in the bottom half of their classes. So how do you deal with grades? A lot of students turn off. They get their grades, especially first year, first semester, and they go, I'm sunk. And they never put a lot of effort into the job search anyway because they feel that this is it. And it's a bad attitude to take, because at smaller law firms in particular, the emphasis is on experience, interpersonal, and desire to work at the small firm, and less on the grades. So don't shine a bright light on the grades, but give the employer something to hang their hat on in terms of that you're smart enough to do this kind of work. Because everyone who's going to graduate from American is smart enough to pass the bar in practice. You wouldn't be here if you weren't. But now you have to give them something to hang their hat on. So here are some suggestions that I give. You can do selected grades. So if you've been a star in certain classes, even if they're disparate classes, like you just have uneven performance, it's inexplicable, put those grades. If you're a first year and the only thing that is the shining example is that you're a great draftsman, you do well in legal research, put your legal research and writing grade. If you're lucky and you've done well in a particular family of courses and it corresponds to the interest that you have in practicing, then put all your for example, tax and related courses on there, okay? This way it gives them something that they can look at and say, oh, I understand this person's very bright, but they got a D in constitutional law. We don't practice constitutional law. That's okay. What you want to do is do these in batches, okay? If you're a third-year law student, and this is just an example of timing issues, if you're a third-year law student, it's not a bad idea to start exploring options now. You can even say as a third year, I'd like to work part-time during the spring semester so you get to know me and I get to know you. Keep in mind that you're kind of a lame duck as a third year until you pass the bar exam. So you have to keep your options open. You're going to be looking for a job really for the next, I hate to say this, like, you know, 6 months or so while you study for the job, for the bar exam. But there's no reason why, even as a third year, you can't start the networking, cultivating, and research process to get the word out there. And giving an employer the enticement of, I'm willing to work on a part-time basis can be good. If you're a first or a second year law student, because there's no hiring season for small firms, you could start now. Second years in particular, I'd say, well, if you're in a position to work on a part-time basis spring semester, now's as good a time as any, for example, to write to small firms that you've selected, especially if you want to stay here this summer, and say, I'm willing to work on a part-time basis during spring semester and continue through the summer, you know, and so forth. It's a little trickier, of course, if you want to look in Los Angeles or Miami or somewhere distant, but you can start the process and get the ball rolling. And if you're a first-year student, I worked a lot, law school and college. First year is not a time to work at all, in my opinion. So if you're a first-year student, I might start to explore small firms at this point, but keep in mind that it's also okay to start looking in March, April. You know, now is also, you know, it's not a bad time to start, but it might be a little early for small firms to contemplate May and June hiring. You'll see. You want to do follow-up. I always tell law students, don't mail and run. A lot of students do that. They do all this hard research, right? You've done all the work. You've networked. You've put together these great letters. They're meaningful cover letters. You've really expressed yourself well. You throw the stuff in the mail, and then you run screaming, going, I'm done, and you wait for the letters to come. I always recommend that you do some sort of follow-up, whether it's a phone or an email, 5 to 7 business days later. Why? Based on conversations with small law firms, they said, you know what, it's not a bad thing for someone to ping an email note or maybe call and just very nicely and briefly say, hi, this is Donna Gerson. I know you're busy, but I sent you a letter because I'm very interested in working for you this summer. I want to be at a small family law firm in Bethesda, Maryland, blah, blah, and then have a short conversation and see if there's interest. And you can do this and just leave a voicemail. It's fine to do that. Because the other thing I always tell students is don't stalk people. Like, I don't want the message here to be that I want you to go ahead and keep calling and calling and bugging these people. But I think it gives you some nice closure to be able to say, look, you might not get a lot of feedback when you send letters out to small firms. They're not equipped the way that larger law firms are, so they might not respond right away and say, we don't have openings. It might feel like it's going into the great black hole of job searching, and you'll feel disappointed. So by doing a follow-up phone call or email, you at least have a chance to have one last word. It also increases the chances, and I've been told this by small firms, that someone with initiative, somebody with the follow-up ability, sometimes impresses a small firm practitioner. Sometimes when they're sitting at their desk with all this billable work that they're going to get sued for if they don't do quickly, versus all of the discretionary work that's there, like the ABA journal and unsolicited resumes and cover letters and CLE, you know, certification and all that, they might say, that person sounded pleasant on the phone, or that email had a nice tone to it. I might actually need somebody, and they'll take your resume and take a look at it and give you a favorable shot. I also want to stress, too, especially if you're a first or second year law student, even third year law students, looking in distant places, don't waste your spring break. If you're going home or going to a place where you might want to practice law and you're planning to practice when you get out, it's a good thing to bring a suit. I had one guy who had another law school say he didn't want to network when he was home for spring break because he didn't want to shave. So I said, why don't you just pick one day that you shave and make that networking day for yourself. Set up meetings back-to-back for 5 hours and, you know, really steel yourself and put on a suit and tie and go visit the Starbucks and talk to lawyers, because if you're home already, if you've flown or driven home for spring break, why squander the opportunity to set up a bunch of meetings so that people get to know you and you get to see what's going on? I don't think you should take a vacation from this. When you're going to hear from law firms in the following ways. Either you will be roundly ignored, In which case, you should keep in mind that when you are practicing law and you get an unsolicited resume, make a note to just write a note and say, sorry, we're not hiring at this time. You might get a note that says, a letter back that says, we are not hiring at this time. My interpretation of letters like that is, but we might be hiring in the future. So they stay on the maybe pile because in 3 months' time, you're going to write to them again. You're going to keep plugging away at these small firms. You might get a letter that says, we do not hire until you pass the bar. That's the policy of this firm. Okay, that's another good fact is you're keeping files and records of the small firms you're contacting that when you pass the bar in October, November, that you change your resume to reflect that you know, you're a member of the Maryland bar, member of the Virginia bar, and you write and say, I've now passed the bar, you know, and re-solicit that firm. You might get a letter that says, we are never hiring ever, 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 and in which case you say, all right, they're not going to hire. I'm going to set this aside for a long time. And you might get fortunate and get a letter that says, we'd be interested in talking to you. We'd like to interview you. In which case, with small law firms, time is of the essence. Move quickly. Call up right away. This is not a time to be coy or to play it, you know, like play it, you know, distant with the firms. Call up right away and say, hi, I'm very interested in coming in. When's the soonest that, you know, I might be able to come in? Because if they're looking to hire, they're going to hire it at their convenience, and if they meet you first and they like you, there's a likelihood that they might cancel all the other appointments or just not make any other calls because they found someone who has a good fit, someone who's going to work, and you're done. So when you go for an interview at a small firm in particular, you're very, very close to getting a job because unlike large law firms, they don't interview for their health necessarily. You know, large firms come on campus for OCI and they'll meet 20, you know, each person will meet 20 students, and then they're going to bring back 5 students, and then after the callback, they might hire 2 of those students. Small firms operate much more on a shoestring, and they'll say, I might bring in 1 person or 2 people at the most, and if I find the person with a good fit, who gets along, who seems to be interested, that's the person I'm going to hire because they're not interviewing for sport and they're not interviewing for their health because they have billable hours in business to cultivate. So here are the tips that the small firms have mentioned, and they're kind of common sense, but they bear repeating. Plan ahead, arrive on time, don't get lost, get your directions. You don't want to arrive too early, but you know, 10-15 minutes early is perfectly appropriate. Research the firm and the lawyers you'll be meeting. Now, of course, you've researched the firm by now because you shouldn't have written to a small firm for whom you don't know where they are and what kind of law they practice generally, but also try to figure out who the lawyers you'll be meeting are and know a little bit about them. I'm not saying create a dossier on each of them because that freaks people out completely. I've had students who have like done a lot of research and says, I know you have 3 kids and I know you coach soccer and I know where you live, and it really makes people spooky. So, but you want to know what practice areas they're in, where they went to school, what interesting work experiences they've had. I always like to do, if they're a litigation-driven firm, I like to do a counsel search on Martindale Hall to see what cases they may have been the counsel of record on published opinions. That can be interesting. But really know what you're getting into because you will impress them very much if you go in and say, I know what you do, I know the practice areas, this connects to me, I want to do this kind of work. This is not the time to be coy with them and say, I'm not sure how I feel about family law. Anticipate objections by thinking ahead. This is a big thing with law students who are in the bottom half of the class. They feel like there's like, you know, like the Scarlet A in Hester Prynne. They feel like there's the Scarlet C of, you know, someone who's in the bottom of the class. Don't, when you're thinking about grades and you're feeling like you might not have performed, that your performance does not reflect how intelligent and hardworking you are, don't go into the interview and confess. These are not confessionals. What you want to do is go to CURS Services, do a little rehearsal, go through and say, here's what I'm scared about. And here are some things, and some of them are valid, and some of them are completely like, you know, student, you know, like the, what I call like the student lounge mentality of you hear it once and all of a sudden you really start to freak out about it. Gaps in resumes. I wouldn't worry unduly about gaps in resumes. You, as law students, you don't have to worry about, you know, the 2-month gap in time or 3. If you've been doing something really interesting or different, you know, you might want to explain it, but it usually doesn't really get on the radar of most employers. Grades. You just be prepared to speak about grades, about how well you've done, things that you've performed well, and everyone has something that they can talk about that will help people understand that you're bright and enterprising and capable. If you didn't get an offer last summer, this is the other red flag that students feel like they have to run in and like explain right away. Rehearse it with career services, because you can always, there's always a calm, rational way to explain what happened last summer that will give comfort to employers. And a lot of times, they're not even focused on it. This is the other thing. Sometimes students will say, I just went on this great interview. I didn't get an offer last summer. They never asked me about it. And I said, did you bring it up? And I said, no. That's the right answer. You don't sit there and confess to people and say anything. If it comes up in conversation, you should have a rational, calm explanation that will give comfort to the employer. Rehearse, schedule a mock interview. This is really important. And especially if you're a law student who thinks you're a really, really good interviewer. I have this all the time. I have this at Pitt, and you have this at all the law schools I visit where I counsel students. They'll come in and say, I did on campus, I had 15 interviews, I had no callbacks, I am a great interviewer. There's a disconnect at that point, because you should be getting some interviews out of 15 interviews. So if you find that you're interviewing but you're not getting callbacks, or you're interviewing and you're never hearing from them again, there's a problem, and you should go and do a videotape mock interview and work out the kinks, because there's a real art to interviewing, and it can be learned. Some students are intuitively good at it. Some students need to just learn some little tips and tricks to make them comfortable and at ease and poised when they do the interview, because you're very close to getting a job at these small firms when you get the interview. And finally, write a thank you note promptly, typically within 24 hours. I'm a proponent of writing a typed correspondence business thank you. You should have a model one on your computer ready to go, so you're not reinventing the wheel. And those, hopefully, these tips will help you secure the small firm job offer when you go for that interview. But I want to conclude, and I'm happy to answer questions, and I do foolishly give my email on the front cover of the handout materials, and I will take email questions as well. Just be patient with me, because I travel lately a lot. Small firms are great places to work. Demographically, they're the place where you're most likely to work, not only right after graduation, but even students who go to big law firms, because of the way that retention works at large law firms, those individuals are likely to end up at small or mid-sized law firms when they're in practice as well. Most students, 95% of the class of 2005, and it's probably going to be more by the end of the month, you will find a job, but it actually does take, I hate to say this, it takes time and energy and a lot of effort, which is why there's more candy, I think, somewhere in the office for you. You're going to have to spend a lot of time doing this, because unfortunately there's no Santa and there's no job fairy and there's no tooth fairy, and you're going to have to do this. And the JD, as much as I felt this way in law school, does not entitle you to just getting the job of your dreams. You really have to work on this. Networking is incredibly important. I can't underscore this enough for you. This is why I put it in red. I want you to really make some effort to read up and do this. You can start as a first year, and this is a lifelong process for you. Work with your career services office, because they are sort of at the heart of all of these contacts you're going to make. So even if you came to law school and you're the first one in your family to go to college and you're the first one in your family to go to law school, you're not alone, because you have this whole alumni base waiting for you here, and a mentor database, and programs that are coming up later this afternoon that are connecting you up to this whole world. And so don't like just lock yourself in the law library or go to classes. Very important, of course, but really take advantage of all the wonderful services that are available through Career Services. And if you fill out your evaluation, I would really appreciate it, because I'm always trying to make sure that this talk in 55 minutes is effective and good and helpful for you. So that's it. And if someone wants to bring me the blue bag, I was going to go grab it. We'll do a really quick raffle, and I can answer some questions too. So thank you very much for having me.